Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we normally come to you every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are also rebroadcast on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time at a2zen.fm. However, this week and for the next month of February, we're going to be on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific time. So make a note of that. It's just due to some sporting events that are going to be airing on Saturdays. So you can't miss the program because we're going to have it up on the website. So that's the one thing I can tell you in all assurance that you will have that information available to you. It's good to have you with us, and it's good to be here with you. This is going to be a fun program, I think, in a lot of ways. It's also going to be, in one sense, I think, at least for me, it's going to be a little bit of a difficult program because the year 2012 was unfortunately a bit of a loss, a year of losses. Throughout the year 2012, we lost several of our family members, our animal friends. And that's sort of the subject for today's program, not so much the loss, as much as it is learning to better communicate and understand where your, and I say family members, because if it's a pet in your home and it's not livestock, and I would say some people actually would maybe view even their livestock as family members as well, but they're not just pets. They become an integral part of your life and the lives of your other human family members and friends and associates and so forth. They impact you. They change you in ways that you could not have even imagined from the very beginning. And today we're going to get a little bit of an insight into that with a woman who is an animal communicator. She's a human empowerment coach, and her name is Madeline Walker, all the way from the UK. Madeline, thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. It's great to speak to you. And lovely to hear your words, and I'm sure there's lots we've got to talk about.
Now, we've heard of the Dog Whisperer. I've seen a couple of programs on, I think, Animal Planet, of the Cat Whisperer, if you will, of different people who focus on different animals in specific. And what I've noticed from all of them is that this isn't about getting the animals to necessarily do what you want them to. This is about you, the human, learning how and mostly why animals do what they do. They don't just arbitrarily behave. There are reasons for it, just as there are reasons why we behave in the ways that we do, right?
Absolutely. You know, I get called out to see horses or dogs or cats or whatever because they may have been displaying some unusual, some challenging behavior. And nearly always they're flagging up something that their owners need to address, which is why the two sort of regimes that I work with marry together so well, because if the animal is exposing or flagging up, as I said, a certain issue, then I'm able to work with their human counterparts to address that. And very often the animals will dictate exactly how that needs to happen. And it never ceases to amaze me how much they know about us and how much they want to heal us. It's just extraordinary. And I was listening carefully to what you were saying about our animals being family, and mine certainly are. And I have to say that I had a loss as well just before the first day of December. My Border Terrier that I'd had for 14 and a half years, I just felt it was time to let her go, and it was incredibly hard, and I miss her so much still. But I know that she's around and she's helping me, and we've just been through so much together, so many ups and downs. And I think, sadly, with the sort of the logic of the lifespan of our pets, that, you know, we are going to have to experience this heartache, but the upside is that they give us so much joy when they're with us. It's worth that pain because of the joy that they do give us. But it's very hard. So I have huge empathy for you, when you were talking about the loss of some of your members, because, say, my animals are my family. They're my best friends as well, and I can't imagine a life without them.
Well, I know that in my first marriage, my first wife was totally blind, and she went off to get a guide dog in San Rafael, and she was gone for an entire month. And when she came back, she came walking off of the plane. And when I saw her and the dog, the first thought that went through my mind was, I know what's going to happen in 8 to 10 years. There's no way I'm getting close to this dog. Mm. Well, that's virtually impossible. And in this case, obviously in this case, it was as well, because I did get close to this dog, and or at least as close as I was able to under the circumstances, because that is a special relationship and a unique relationship between the guide dog user and the guide dog itself. And I learned a great deal about that aspect. And there are so many different types of animals out there who are service animals as well. I worked in a high rise back in Phoenix where, on one of the floors, they weren't guide dogs that they were training, but they were service animals for different purposes. And it was just extraordinary. And this really goes to what you are speaking about in terms of what role and function, if you will, these animals play in our lives in terms of the healing of the human being and how connected they become to us when there are no words exchanged. I mean, there is no vocabulary that's that we know and they know that we're able to communicate. We kind of look at it as hit and miss.
Well, I believe that they learn to understand the commands that we give them, but they mind read. They can sort of really tune into our thoughts. I realized this when my old rescue dog, Winnie, that I still have now, she's amazing. I used to think to myself, right, I'm just going to put the washing on, I'm just going to cook that bit of rice, do a few more chores, and then when I've done all those, and I would sort of list the chores in my mind, and then I said, right, I think, you know, I'll go for a walk then. And I watched her behavior because I could see her watching me and almost like ticking off the list of the sort of duties or chores I wanted to do before we went for the walk. And when I'd come to the end of perhaps the very last thing that I'd thought I'd had to do before we got ready to go out, she would start to get really excited. And I thought, I haven't picked up a lead, I haven't put any boots on, I haven't put a coat on. But she would know. She had really listened to my thoughts of what I was going to do before we went for a walk. And every time she would know exactly when I'd finished the last chore, and then she knew that was when I would start to get my coat on and pick up the leash and to go out. But they're just extraordinary, and they can really scan our bodies to see how we are functioning emotionally and physically. And sometimes you'll get a dog that really, really seems to be staring at you as though it's trying to tell you something or show you something. And of course, a lot of us know they're trying to communicate something, but we can't quite get it. But they are extraordinary because, luckily through me, they convey their messages, and then I'm able to translate, if you like, to show their owners exactly what the dog's been trying to show them and to tell them. And it's extraordinary what they, as I said, what they know about us and how much they can heal us. And I mean, there's been a lot of information about how animals can detect heart attacks or epileptic fits, and how they can really reduce heart rate and respiration rate, and how healing they are just on that superficial level. But my understanding and what the animals have been teaching me is that this goes much, much deeper, and it's led me in the most amazing, mind-blowing directions.
Mm. Well, and of course, you do take this to another level, maybe beyond that of, say, the dog or the cat whisperer, as we may know them, because you have that that special connection. And I guess animal intuitive. You're not an animal or pet psychic in that. That's not what you call yourself.
I don't call myself that, but there are aspects of psychic work, certainly mediumship, because very often people will send me a photograph of an animal that they've loved and has passed in the spirit, and I'm able to connect with that animal and hopefully get reassuring messages for their bereaving owners. And it's been wonderful and a real privilege to be able to support and help people in that situation, because as we know, it's a very, very tough place to be when, especially if you maybe live on your own and your only companion is an animal that's just passed over. You know, it's devastating. Mm-hmm. So to be able to connect with them from spirit and to get messages, as I said, to reassure, and I've had so much evidence that I totally believe in animals having a soul, having an afterlife, and that they are actually able to come back to us and that we can have many lifetimes with them. And I suppose that's a direction that my work has expanded in a surprising tangent, if you like, to what I wasn't really expecting to be shown that sort of situation. But the very first time I communicated with an animal, it talked to me about reincarnation, and that was a bit of a shock because I wasn't expecting that one. But it's, as I said, it's just taught me so much of just how deep our connections are with our animals.
Well, then let me ask you what it is that you need to have in order to be able to connect with, and is it only animals who have crossed over, or are you actually, you're actually able to communicate with those who are present here today?
Oh, absolutely, both. Normally with animals that are passed over, I can work just from a photograph. With an animal that's still on this physical plane, I generally ask for a photograph and a little bit of fur, if it's a horse, a little bit of mane or tail, and that sort of holds the energy of the animal, which I can then tune into. But sometimes animals are very good mediums. They can give me information about a human or another animal that's passed over for their owners to also give them, I suppose, reassurance that the animal does know a lot about what's happening for them. I've had horses that have been talking to me about their owner's bereavement of maybe, say, their husband or their wife that's passed over, and the horse can tell me a lot about, you know, what's been going on, and how, maybe showing me that perhaps the owner's come and found that the only solace they can get is by maybe snuggling into the horse's shoulder, maybe having a good cry, and that's been a wonderful release for them, and the animals have been very happy to be that companion and that support system. It's part of what they're here for, and dogs, I think, are experts at bringing unconditional love. They don't care what we look like in the morning. They don't care, you know, who we are, what we are. They just want to love us.
Yeah. Now, you have other materials available for folks as well on your website that they can access. One in particular is called An Exchange of Love. You also have these very unique animal cards.
I'm really excited about these. These are called empowerment cards. They're Animal Whispers empowerment cards. And these are messages from all kinds of different animals. I wanted to tune into so many, as wide a variety of animals as possible, so that there should be something for everyone. There are sea mammals, there are insects, there are birds, domestic pets, wild animals, all sorts. And each one has their own unique message of empowerment and encouragement, because the main message from the wild species that I also go and travel extensively to communicate with, they all seem to have this same message for us to be, for humankind, to be all that we can be, to reclaim our power and actually stand up for ourselves, but also stand up for our planet, because if we don't look after our planet and the animals, then there's no hope for humankind. So it's a very important message. And so many of the cards are of images of the actual animal that I met. For instance, there's a moray eel card, and this actual image is of a very large, rather scary moray eel that I met while I was snorkeling off a beautiful beach on the Andaman Islands off southern India. Mm-hmm. And luckily, I have this wonderful chap who comes and takes underwater photographs of stills and video of me encountering these rather large and sometimes daunting creatures. But the moray eel came out and glowered at me and gave me this information, this message about boundaries and being firm and creating strong boundaries around yourself so that you can maintain your energy and not feel drained or invaded by some people who maybe want to behave in that way. So it was a very powerful message, and I was extremely happy to give a lot of space in his boundary because he was quite scary. But it was lovely to have his image of that particular creature that gave me that message, and have that conveyed onto the incredible artwork of these cards that this wonderful artist Richard Crooks created for me. I'm just so thrilled with them. I think he's done the most amazing job, and they have a real magic about them. And it's so lovely because in his artwork, he's really captured the energy and the essence of each particular animal.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had some wonderful feedback from people who have been using them as sort of divination tool. They're not like tarot cards. They're maybe just one you could pick a day or once a week to just give you a confidence boost. Mm-hmm. But there are various different ways of using them. But I'm very excited about them, and I'm just very thrilled that I had the chance to get them out there and to share with people.
Well, I think it's very cool that all of these different modalities, as I like to call them, are available to folks to find ways of working through. And sometimes it takes a while. I mean, my wife lost her dog Connor back in August of 2012. And, of course, she has been wanting to get a new puppy for the longest time. And I said, well, let's wait until after the first of the year, because my dog, Makushla, needs some time, too. She needs some time to adjust. She's been second fiddle, so to speak, for the longest time. And she now needs to get all of the attention that we can give her. And we've been doing that. One of Makushla's characteristics, though, that I have found initially when I first met her and we first started having her in our home, was that she is an extremely energetic dog, just a live wire. She's all white. She's a white shepherd mix, and she's like a white tornado sometimes, and spins and spins. But she almost whistles when she whines, if you will. It's not a cry, because when we come home and we bring her in the house, she races around the house just like any animal would, saying, oh my gosh, you're home. Thank you so much for coming home and letting me in. I'm glad you guys are here. Happy to see us. But it's that little whining sound that's just constant. And I used to think, oh, is she hurting? And I realized, no, she's not hurting. And this is after literally years of being around her and understanding, you know, that if she was hurting, she would behave in a totally different way. So this is just the way that she expresses herself. And
yeah, it just feels like a sort of a chuntering, just sort of communicating her happiness.
Exactly.
That's what it feels like.
Exactly. She just absolutely loves it when we come home. Now, I want her to have a partner just as much as my wife does. At the same time, I want her also to have the experience of being the only animal in the house, the only dog anyway. And then, of course, she gets along really well with all our cats and so forth, including the smallest one that we have, Rupert. And he now sleeps with my wife and has his own crate next to her. So she has that right now. But it's not the same thing. I know that she wants another puppy. And we miss Connor dearly. I mean, and when you lose someone, it's never the objective. You never think this way, but people will sometimes say it, that you're replacing. Oh, no, of course not. We're not replacing anyone. We just know that another animal is out there, and we have to, and they have to find us. And that's really what it is, isn't it? Is we can't go out actually, you know, looking. I mean, there's a certain level of, you know, active participation in the process. But it's not about just going to the nearest dog shelter and, I'll take that one. There has to be a connection.
Absolutely. And it's very synchronistic, because actually I've just acquired a new puppy, a rescue puppy. She's 4 months old now. And we've gone through exactly the same thing. You know, Winnie's been having time on her own. She's been having lots of fuss. But I know that she's missed my old dog, because she's just always been here. When we got Winnie, Teetle was just all every day of her life. Teetle's been here for her, so I know that she's missed a playmate and a support system of another dog. But you know, we have been lavishing all the affection on her. But again, I was sort of thinking about looking at, and I think for both of us it was very healing. We both needed another sentient being. And it, as you say, it's not about replacing the old dog at all, but I've felt her energy come through and explain why she had to leave at that time, to pass at that time, and that this new puppy would be helping me go forward in a new phase of our life, that the last 14 and a half years of having Teasel in my life was for a certain phase of my life, that she was here for all of my awakening, my spiritual awakening, and that now she felt that she could do far more for me in spirit, and that I needed to go forwards in other directions, mm-hmm. and that there was another doggy being coming for that next phase in my life. And I had actually rung up about this particular puppy. She was in a rescue center. She had been fostered, but she was Blue Merle, and I had a Blue Merle Collie cross years ago, and I really felt, and that dog has been sending me lots of information and lots of messages of support and helping me let go of guilt and the messages to help other people let go of guilt. And she was called Pillow, which is a very silly name, mm-hmm. but she was just so soft and cuddly, and so she just got nicknamed Pillow, and it just stuck. And so I saw a photograph of this little puppy, another Blue Merle puppy, and she just looked so gorgeous, and I really felt strongly that perhaps Pillow was sending her to me to help us go forwards, to help Winnie and myself. And anyway, when I rang up, she had just been reserved by another person who wanted to give her a home, so I was so disappointed. So I was all set to maybe try and look elsewhere, and had found another puppy that was another rescue puppy. I wanted to try and give a home to an animal that really, really needed it. And with that, the phone rang, and this woman said all the people that had reserved this puppy came to collect her, but actually turned her down because she wasn't quite the type. Oh, I'll actually speak of them, because she's just making a noise now. they didn't want her, so would you like to have her? And I just felt that she was obviously so meant to come to me. And, you know, she's come and she's settled in really well. And it's just a real joy to have her. And it's lovely to see Winnie having a new playmate, having someone to have fun with. And it's lovely. But it is a dilemma, because, you know, you don't want to feel that the remaining dog isn't enough, or that anyone might think that you're trying to replace it. And as you say, of course you're not replacing it.
Yeah.
They're irreplaceable. You know, they're totally unique in their own way, aren't they? So it's interesting, because we've just gone through that process. So anyway, she's been... I just felt that she wanted to be called Duvet because Pillow had sent her. So I asked her what she thought of the name, and she said that she liked the name Duvet, and she's answered to the name Duvet for about 5 minutes of having her. She just knows her name.
Wow.
But I feel a bit silly going out into my garden shouting Duvet. But she also loves being wrapped up in her creature comfort. She loves having a blanket around her. So I think Duvet is a very appropriate name for her, if a bit silly, but she's absolutely adorable. And it's so nice to see my old dog actually having a new lease of life, enjoying playing again. It's really nice to see that.
Well, we went through a similar situation when Makushla came into our lives, because my wife, Amrita, today, had four Siberian Huskies that she and her ex-husband used to run on,
wow.
on land as well as snow.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, over the course of 3 years, three consecutive years, we had to put down the first three, 1 year at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when we put down the third one, which was his sister, we took all three to the vet to have this done, because we just felt that was the appropriate thing to do. We've since learned that the better thing to do is to do it right there while they're there, so they see what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, Chemo was his name. He just went ballistic. I mean, I've seen humans grieve to this level, but I've never seen an animal just beside himself with grief.
Mm.
So I thought, you know, we need to get him somebody that he can look after and be the pack leader for. And so Makushla came along. And so she played the role of Beta, and he was able to be the Alpha again, or for the first time. So at least it gave him something to do and gave him extra life. Then we moved out here to Santa Barbara. We believe from Phoenix to Santa Barbara gave him an extra year on his life. And he actually passed away in the dog run with Makushla, which was a good thing. And Connor was there as well. So they were there. They saw him getting weaker and weaker and slower and slower. So they were a part of that process. And so their grieving was minimal by our experiencing them. When it's sudden, like a sudden death, and in the case of Connor, he was bitten by a rattlesnake, and unfortunately, we weren't there when it happened. So when we came home, he was already gone. I mean that, but yet Makushla was there and saw him as well. Yet we have two neighbor dogs who used to come over for play days with our two dogs. One of those dogs, over the course of the last few months, their owner would say he would just sit in the yard and howl. He never did that before Connor's passing.
He really felt it, didn't he?
Yeah. And so these are the kinds of things that we experience as humans of our animal companions, our family members. And when we get back from our break, I would like to talk more about you, Madeline Walker, and the walk that you have taken over the course of your time here on Earth in terms of how all of this began for you and your experiences with that connection with the animal kingdom. And when we come back, we'll talk more about that. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we're talking about animals. We're talking with Madeline Walker. And I'm going to give you her website. I'm going to bring that up here. It is anexchangeoflove.com. That's anexchangeoflove.com. When we get back, more with Madeline Walker here on Tell Me Your Story.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. We're talking with Madeline Walker, and she is one who talks with the animals. I have to say, Madeline, my wife does great communicating with the animals. Sometimes I even jokingly say that she is a Dr. Doolittle of sorts and does just a phenomenal job. We foster kittens here locally in Santa Barbara as well, especially mamas. My understanding is that she also wants to foster she wants to get into the area of hospice care for elderly and terminal cats in particular. Not an easy task to take on, especially if you're also experiencing the loss of your own. That is something that even to suggest it to me, even to offer to do it, requires a very unique spirit of sorts.
Absolutely, you know, huge compassionate soul to do that. It's a real gift, as it, you know, it is for humankind. For any hospice care is, you know, you have to be, say, a very unique kind of person to be able to deal with that and to cope with the emotional side of everything. And it is a huge gift that you give these beings that are, you know, about to pass over. It's a wonderful gift to support them through that.
How in the world did you ever get started in something like this? Because it doesn't sound to me like there are any post-secondary educational facilities in the world anywhere that actually can teach this stuff. It seems as though it's something you're either born with or you're not.
Well, actually, I do run courses. I don't say teaching. I say reminding people, because it is a skill that we all have. We all have this ability to intuit, to communicate with all beings, all living things, you know, be it trees, plants, rocks, crystals, whatever. The indigenous people have been doing it for thousands and thousands of years. It's just many of us have become rather westernized and materialistic, and we've lost those skills. But if we allow ourselves to be open our hearts and minds, then all of us are able to communicate with animals. We just need to give those old muscles a bit of a stretch and give it a go. But it's lovely to assist people in remembering how to do it. But as you said, it wasn't something I was expecting at all. It wasn't something I went looking for, although I've been completely obsessed with animals all my life. I used to be married to a very scientific vet who doesn't necessarily approve of the slightly alternative directions that my work has gone in. But I was just cuddling this little Jack Russell puppy one day, and my friend Lee had him for about 4 or 5 days. And I'd gone over to see her horses, but when I heard she had a new puppy, I said, ooh, can I come and have a cuddle? So he was lying on his back on my lap, and as I was looking down at him, he suddenly seemed to be really, really fixing me with his stare, really, really gazing into my eyes. And I suddenly heard this voice in my head, which I knew wasn't mine, and I seemed to just know that it was coming from him, though it seemed very strange. And he said to me that he was a reincarnation of Lee's old dog, and that he'd come back to carry on helping her. And I was so shocked, I put him down because I was a bit freaked out, because I thought, okay, there's a dog actually talking to me, but not only is it talking to me, it's talking about reincarnation. And I'd been fairly open to the concept of human reincarnation, but I'd never really considered animals reincarnating at all. I don't know why, I just hadn't thought of it. So anyway, I put him down, and he went and sat next to my friend Lee's big farmhouse range. And the little Jack Russell puppy looked at me again, and his head started to change, sort of morph into that of a border collie. And I really wondered what was in my cup of tea that Lee had made me. I thought, am I hallucinating here? And then just suddenly, the head went back to being a little a Jack Russell puppy head again. But the border collie head that it had morphed into had very specific spots on the muzzle in a very specific pattern. And when I mentioned this to Lee, I said to her, I didn't have the courage to say to her, did you used to have a border collie? I just said to her, have you had a dog before? And she said, oh, not for years. And I said, well, what did you have? And she said, I had a border collie called Briar. Why do you ask? And I said, well, you're going to think I'm completely crazy, but Sam, your puppy's just told me and actually showed me that he's a reincarnation of Briar, and he's come back to carry on helping you. And so I asked her if she had a photograph of Briar, and she had a sort of a rummage around in the old suitcases and found a photograph, a very ancient photograph of Briar. And when she showed it to me, it was exactly what Sam the puppy had shown me, with these very specific spot pattern on the muzzle. And so that was a bit spooky, really. And from then on, the animals just seemed to come out of the woodwork to talk to me and tell me their problems and tell me where they were feeling pain. And it's just been a completely vertical learning curve and an amazing, amazing journey that was completely unexpected. And I feel so blessed that it's taken me in so many weird and wonderful directions. So I feel very, very lucky, and I love my work so much, because you never quite know what's going to happen, and I'm always constantly amazed by the love that the animals have for us.
What about your spiritual upbringing? What kind of an influence did that have in your acceptance of this gift?
I suppose my spiritual upbringing was fairly laid back. We were what we called Church of England, but weren't really very strong churchgoers. My father was into the spiritualist church, and he did work as a platform speaker occasionally. But my parents divorced when I was about 9, so I didn't have a huge amount of time with my father, although I suppose I was open to the concept of communicating with spirit. But I think when many of us retrace our steps of our spiritual awakening, I think it's amazing to see how guided and nudged back on track that we are. And I feel that the animals have really done that for me. When I look back at all the animals that I've shared my life with, and that they have affected me in so many incredible ways, I realize the direction they were diverting me to or leading me to, and it's just an extraordinary journey. When I started to go out and connect with wild species, I always wanted to go and swim with dolphins, and I had to wait till I was 51 to go and swim. I wanted to go for my 50th birthday as a present to myself, but unfortunately my mother was very, very ill, and after her passing, she left me a very small amount of money, but she wanted me to have adventures. It's my adventure fund, and to do all the things that I really dreamed of doing all my life and never really had the chance to do. And so I booked a trip to go and swim with dolphins, and sort of got hooked with connecting with large sea creatures, because then from then on I went to swim with humpback whales, and I've swum with huge whale sharks and sperm whales, and it's just led me in the most amazing directions, and I've had these incredible messages and incredible close encounters emotionally and physically with these amazing creatures. So it's been a roller coaster of emotions and lots of ups and downs along the way, but I feel that everything has happened that has led me to where I am today, and I feel incredibly lucky, even though there's been loss, and my marriage broke up, and lots of emotional stuff going on. But I know that if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't have had the freedom to do the things I do now and to go to the places that I go now. So I'm very grateful for all the emotional ups and downs that have taught me so much and led me to this very spot today.
Well, I'm curious as to some of the communication that goes on between you and specifically the animals in the wild. It seems to me that the more domesticated creatures that you deal with are going to have more of an owner-based communication in terms of, you know, this is what I'm feeling about so-and-so, and this is what's happening here, and those types of things. Whereas I'm wondering what types of messages that you receive from the wild kingdom, as it were. Are they more generalized, this is what's happening here on Earth, and this is what humanity's doing, or are some of these messages more specific? Are there instances where they actually communicate with you about what's going on, even maybe with you?
Yes, quite a lot with me, but generally they're more in tune with the rhythms of the planet. They seem to be more keen to encourage humankind to honor themselves, but also honor the planet. The whales, and it's interesting because I've swum and connected with quite a few different species of whale, but they all seem to have the same message about love, about the only thing that really conquers all is that concept of love and unconditional love. And it's wonderful to hear it from a sperm whale, from a humpback, from a pilot whale. They're all saying the same thing, and this can be in very, you know, diverse areas of the planet that they all seem to have this message. And I went out to meet the white lions in South Africa, and I connected with one huge male lion. And actually, I'm going back out there again at the end of March to revisit the white lions, because I feel it's important now at this time of the sort of planet's evolution after 2012 to reconnect and to get more information. I mean, I can do it from a distance, but of course it's very, very powerful when you're actually in close proximity to these incredible creatures. But the message from the lion was that we must be lion-hearted in our endeavors and step up to the plate to start helping the animals help us help the planet. And I thought that was a very powerful message, which, again, has been the catalyst, I think, for creating these empowerment cards. And I feel that this huge lion is really behind me, sort of pushing me forwards, to get the message out there of just how important the animal kingdom is to humankind. And it's I feel my privilege to be a part of that, to be their voice. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so wonderful to be able to speak to people like yourself to spread that word, to hopefully raise awareness of people. And even if they think it's crazy, but if it might make them think and look at their own animals in a slightly different way, and maybe just think about the next time their dog or cat sits and really stares at them, that perhaps there is more going on than perhaps them wanting their food or wanting a walk or whatever. There is a whole new level of understanding, a whole new level of communication and connection than perhaps they previously were aware of.
Mm-hmm. If you've just joined us, I'm talking with Madeline Walker. She talks to the animals. I'll put it just quite that simply. She's sort of a human coach as well. She has some empowerment cards that are very unique, very colorful, and I think can be very helpful. She has a website, exchangeoflove.com. That's also the title of a book that's available as well, and you can get more information. And just as a reminder, we have on occasion, and more occasion than not, folks, we have what's called the afterview, meaning that if we come to the end of our radio broadcast, there's more. And if we come to the end of our A to Zen broadcast, there is more. So all you have to do is go to richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and you click on the play button. You can also download the interview as well. There's more than what you've heard. It's called the afterview. And we just continue on talking and chatting away about the subject at hand. In this case, it's our love and care for animals and their love and care for us as well. And we're going to talk more in just a moment about some of the messages. But before we do that, Madeline, what I want to do is find out if you are able to use this gift and to transition from animals to humans, or is there some difference in the ability, your ability to do that, be, you know, due to maybe humans putting up their guard and the shields and so forth that don't sort of let you in?
That's a very good question. I think us humans are very good at that sort of thing. I think animals are generally, not always, but generally much more open. There have been occasions, especially with horses, that have been very, very traumatized and feel very fearful at opening up themselves to humans to sort of wrinkle out their traumas, rather like if you were having a counseling session with a human. You know, you have to be extremely gentle in coaxing that information out in order to support them and to help them release whatever the trauma might be. So my job is to hopefully build up a sort of a cord of love from my heart to the animal's heart, to hopefully create up that connection of trust. And so I feel when I'm working with humans that that is exactly the same, that I have to show that empathy and that love and support and guide them through various processes that the animals have actually taught me. The animals, horses in particular, have given me some wonderful techniques to help people resolve past life trauma, and that's been having the most amazing results and fascinating. In fact, my new book is called Your Pet's Past Lives and How They Can Heal You, and there are many case studies and stories in there about how the animals have shown me a past life trauma between them and their owner in this current incarnation, but also show you in a past incarnation what might have happened and how we can go back and just completely rewrite it and reframe it and heal it. And horses taught me how to do that, and I've been having some great results with that. And thanks to the animals, I'm able to help more and more humans as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the other types of messages that you've received and the guidance. That's, to me, that's kind of an interesting perspective as well. Maybe even from your own animals, your own pets would obviously be more attuned to you. Are they able to give you guidance as to directions for you to go as you move forward in this using this gift?
Yes, I think they do. Having said that, I think sometimes because when we can be sometimes a bit too close to our own animals. Sometimes I find it difficult to read my own animals because there's such a huge emotional connection. Mm. And then sometimes it's like connecting with your children. When you're a bit too close, it can be difficult at times. Having said that, I notice with Winnie, my other rescue dog, my older dog, she has been like a guardian angel to my youngest son who has Asperger's syndrome. And she has told me so much about what's going on for him, what sort of day he had at school, how he's feeling physically, you know, if he's got a tummy upset or he's got a pain in his head. She will tell me everything that's going on for him. And as he got older, I mean, he's 18 now and he's left home, he would get quite cross because she would just, you know, just grass him up on all sorts of things. So she's just been the most amazing support and confidant for him. In the first book, An Exchange of Love, it talks about my younger son who had a pet goat called Mulberry. And Mulberry was a sort of previous, took up that role previously to the dog Winnie. And he, as a little boy, he would just be, the only time he would be really happy and relaxed would be when he was out with the goats. And he would be with Mulberry and just wrap his arms around her. And she would just look after him and just be his guardian. And she was a beautiful, beautiful creature. And not a sort of a conventional pet for a little boy to have, but that goat was something very, very special. So, but I mean, I remember sitting out in the garden and a housefly landing on my arm, and I was not going to squash it, obviously, but it was tickly, so I was about to just gently brush it away, and it just suddenly seemed to be really staring at me, in however a fly might stare at you, but I just thought, whoa, and I just thought, oh, I need to listen to this fly, I'm sure it wants to say something. And it said to me, in no uncertain terms, very sort of firmly, it said, you have such a big heart for everyone and everything else, but why don't you let yourself in? And I thought, whoa, that's pretty profound, coming from a fly. And it was absolutely true. I hadn't really thought about really loving myself or nurturing myself very much. I was always busy rushing around trying to help everybody else and all the other animals. And I hadn't really been liking myself too much. And that fly just, in a nutshell, just completely summed up exactly what I needed to do. Mm. And once I'd got the message, it seemed to stomp around my arm, and then it looked at me again as though to say, "You got it? Did you hear me?" And then it just flew off. And I've had several messages since then from flies that have just landed on me in a similar way. And I thought, "Ooh, here we go. Maybe there's another message here for me." And they've all been just as profound and just extraordinary. I don't know why I wouldn't imagine a fly could speak to me, but it just proved to me that any creature can give you a message. I've had a very interesting conversation with a cockroach that scared me a bit because it jumped out of a packet of biscuits that I had in my beach room in Mexico when I'd gone out to swim with whale sharks. I stayed in this beautiful thatched little hotel on a beach on an island off the Yucatan Peninsula, and I'd taken these crackers into my bedroom and I'd opened them and this huge cockroach jumped out. And so it made me jump a bit, but I then decided that I needed to have a chat with this cockroach. And it told me a lot about believing in myself, and we came to an agreement that I would put out some crackers outside on the sort of boarding outside my room just while I was there. And then, because obviously I was in his space, it was his room really, he was there before me, mm-hmm. but I didn't necessarily want to be sharing my room or to get up in the middle of the night and step on him, so he was happy if I put some crackers, crumbs outside, that he would stay outside, and then when I went, he might take up residence again, or he could choose where he wanted to be. But I wanted to be able to thank him for his wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting perspective, because where I live, up in the wilderness country above in the mountain above Santa Barbara, most all of us who live up in that area are aware that we are living in the wild animals territory and not the other way around. And so when we get various critters that are roaming around in our yards, as it were, or manage to find their way into our homes, little raccoons or this, that, and the other thing, it's like, okay, you cannot... it has been... I remember talking with an exterminator, for example, and he was telling me, and this was back in Phoenix, he says, you can never get rid of these critters. You can only maintain the situation. And in a manner of speaking, that's the case here. It's not a question of getting rid of them. It's a question of finding ways of saying, okay, we need to find a way to coexist in this environment together. Yes, you were here first, and I will acknowledge that. At the same time, I do live here and would like to continue doing so. In some semblance of harmony. Now, some people might say, you're absolutely out of your mind. You know, it's like, well, why don't you go live in a bear's den, you know, with grizzlies or something like that? We don't do that. But that's almost what someone might think. And so I'm curious as to some of the wild creatures and maybe their perspective on... For lack of a better phrase, Madeline, man's encroachment on the wild's territory, if you will.
Yes, again, that's a very good point, and it's about balance, isn't it? And unfortunately, us as humans are very good at creating imbalance with nature. And a lot of the animals that are captured for captivity, I feel on a soul level that there is a willingness of a sort of a sacrifice in order for them to teach us what we need to learn. It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because obviously we have to create homes and our ever-expanding population. It's in so many areas we are encroaching into the animals' territory. You've got the rainforests and all those sorts of places and the damage we're doing to the oceans. It's a really difficult subject, and it's very challenging. But as I said, on a soul level, the animals are very aware of what is happening, and many of the sacrifices that they make are about our evolution on a soul level. It can be very, very difficult to understand that and very distressing. You know, there's so many cases about, say, for example, shark finning. You know, so many sharks, these beautiful, perfectly evolved predators. They are the most perfectly created beings. They've been that way for millions of years. They're extraordinary, and yet we are killing them, absolutely desecrating them, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of these beautiful creatures just for fish stock, because there's huge money involved. And it's so shocking because, you know, the ocean, Mother Nature has everything in perfect balance. They keep everything in that balance, in that order within the oceans. And as we have tend to, you know, mess everything up by you know, taking out that top predator, it upsets the whole balance of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And most of our methods are just so short-sighted. And it's really alarming when you find out how much we are destroying these vital creatures and vital aspects of the whole planet, like the rainforest, like the trees. You know, we really have to wake up, and I think that's what the wild creatures are trying to educate us in, that is that we have to really become more aware of exactly what we're doing, and that we really need to start listening to reason, and the animals have that information for us if we can just take the time to bother to listen to them. And that's why I'm so passionate about getting their message out there, because it's, you know, we have to start doing this now.
Right.
I laughed when you mentioned raccoons, because in the UK we don't have raccoons.
Well, we can send you some. They're much. They're very fun.
They're wonderful. I've seen plenty of raccoons in Canada, but I thought I had a badger, which obviously are indigenous to the UK, coming into my cat flap into my kitchen. And for several nights, this creature came in and was creating the right mess in my dog's water bowl, full of grass and mud and everything, and was rooting out the dog biscuit bags and that sort of thing. And I caught this very grey, fluffy backside shooting out through the cat flap, so I assumed it would be a badger. And I didn't mind, because he started to give me these incredible messages about the planet, about cosmology, all sorts of crazy, crazy things.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently he had been creating quite a disturbance in my neighbour's garden, because he'd been rolling their flower pots around and breaking them. So they, of course, assumed it was a badger as well. So they phoned the local badger rescue centre, who came out and baited a trap and captured this, what was supposed to be a badger. But when they found him in the trap, it was actually a raccoon. So that was just so bizarre, because what on earth was a raccoon doing, you know, being free, running around the countryside in England? But not only that, he found me by coming into my cat flap and started to give me all these messages. He started talking about the damage that humans are doing with fracking. He talked about star systems, lots of information that was way over my head, and I had to try and find people that could help me decipher the information, because I realized that it was very important. But the whole concept of a raccoon, of all things, in the UK, finding me, coming into my cat flap and telling me this information was just so mind-boggling. And, you know, it's just extraordinary. I mean, of course, raccoons would do that. I mean, as I know that in North America, they're very, very cheeky. But I did think at the time it was a very strange behavior for a badger to do, because they're normally very reclusive and very shy mm-hmm. of humans. And, of course, I've got the dogs here as well. So it was just amazing to have a raccoon in England coming into my kitchen through my cat flap. So, but obviously he felt that he had to come and tell me this information. So I've had to find ways of sharing that, because it was obviously very important that he told me these things.
Yeah.
And he actually told me that I needed to go to the solar plexus chakra of the earth to do some healing. And I had no idea where the solar plexus chakra in the earth was. And then when I Googled it, I found that actually it was at Uluru in Australia, obviously. And I was, by coincidence, though there's no such thing as coincidence, I was due to fly out to Australia in about 2 or 3 weeks' time. And I've actually booked on a flight to go to Uluru to visit this wonderful, wonderful, iconic, sacred place. And so when I found out that that's where the solar plexus chakra was, that was just a mind-tingling sort of moment that this raccoon should give me that message when my flight was already booked previously to that encounter. So, and he said that when I got there, he would give me more information on how to do this planetary healing. And when I got there, he did. It was extraordinary. So that whole sequence of events is just so completely crazy, but amazing at the same time.
Yeah. I want to touch upon something it might be a little hard for some folks to listen to, but I'm curious as to whether or not you have received any messages, any information regarding the various very large sea creatures, whales, dolphins in particular, and the reasons why they are beaching themselves. Because my suspicion, and I may be wrong, is not just or even that the waters are polluted and the pollution has killed them, and that's why they've beached themselves. I half suspect there's another reason.
Well, of course, there are also these sonic tests that the Navy are carrying out, and that is very disorientating for these cetaceans. So there is that aspect. But there also, again, it seems to be a sort of sacrifice that they're trying to teach us. There's a lovely lady called Patricia Corey who's written a book called Before We Go, which sort of touches on that aspect of animals, these particular whales, that are doing this beaching, in that they are choosing to leave the earthly plane to better help humanity from the spirit plane. But it's still very, very distressing, and it's just awful to see them when they do beach, and very often even when people try to rescue them, not many actually survive when they try and get them back out into the water. But again, it's like the captive, if you've seen the film called The Cove, when they show how the Japanese capture all these beautiful dolphins, and how many of them are killed for meat, but few of them are actually captured for these dolphinariums, you know, sea aquariums, that sort of thing. And there is, on a soul level, an aspect that these animals are choosing. And again, that can be quite hard to understand. They're actually choosing that captive life in order to teach us, to reach us on levels that perhaps many of us are not conscious about. But it's such a huge picture. A little dog said to me, remember the bigger picture. And the more that I learn from these creatures, the bigger this picture becomes, yeah, and the more mind-blowing it is. But it's still very, very challenging, as you say, and upsetting to see these creatures beach, these beautiful, beautiful beings. And there are physical reasons for this, like you say, like pollution and the sonic testing. But I feel on a soul level that they are, you know, trying to really give us this wake-up call to start honouring the planet much, much more, and realising how the animals are really trying to tell us something that we really, really need to hear.
Right. Before we go, let me ask you, who is Madeline Walker?
Who is Madeline Walker? Oh, well, I feel that I'm, well, like all of us, we're multidimensional, so I think I've got many hats and many facets. But I think the real core essence of me is I'm just an animal lover, and I love Mother Earth, and I feel my main role is to be this ambassador for the animals to really help us help Mother Earth.
And what do you hope to or wish to achieve through the work that you're doing?
I think I just want to raise even more awareness. I'm going out to meet the grey whales in Baja at the end of February. And as I said, I'm going back to South Africa to glean more information from the lions. I'm also going to spend some time with the Kalahari Bushmen, and I'm going to meet Credo Mutwa, who's one of the most renowned shaman of the whole world, really. And I'm going to be so lucky to spend some time learning from him, and hopefully this fodder for the next book. But in all my travels and in all my writing and communications, it is about raising more and more awareness of just how powerful and how profound and how timely the healing messages from the animals are. So I hope to do even more of that and to reach even more people. So thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak to you and to your listeners in America to convey, hopefully in some small way, the messages from the animals to. I hope it's been of interest to your listeners, and maybe, as I said, just might make them think a little bit differently about their pet rabbit or their pet guinea pig or their pet dog, because there are so much more than that.
Animal communicator and human empowerment coach Madeline Walker has been my guest. Madeline, I want to thank you for joining us here on the program and sharing your story with us. And we look forward to not only having you back again in the near future, but also if you ever find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, please look us up. We'd love to talk with you in studio and get a chance to meet you face to face.
I'd love that. So thank you so much.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. A reminder that Madeline's website is anexchangeoflove.com. That's anexchangeoflove.com. Also the title of the book. And then she also has a myriad of other modalities on her website, the empowerment cards and so forth. So check her out. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to all.